Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents The United States of English, the American Language from Colonial Times to the 21st Century, by Rosemary Osler, read by Krista Lewis. Introduction. One country, many Englishes. American English should really be called American Englishes. There isn't just one version. In 2013, the New York Times published an interactive map outlining the dialect regions of the United States. The map was accompanied by a quiz that consisted of 25 multiple-choice questions about people's word uses and pronunciations. For example, what words do you use in casual speech to address two or more people? What do you call a carbonated beverage? How do you pronounce caramel? Do you pronounce caught and caught the same? Many questions had a long list of possible answers. The question about addressing two or more people offered 8 choices, not counting other. You all, yous, you lot, you guys, you-uns, yins, you, and y'all. People who answered y'all or you all were probably identifying themselves as Southerners, especially if 3 of their other answers were Coke, as a generic term for a carbonated beverage, caramel, with 3 syllables, and caught and caught, pronounced differently. Someone from the Midwest would most likely have answered you guys, pop, and caramel, with 2 syllables. That person would probably pronounce caught and caught differently too, but not necessarily. The dialect map probably did not hit the bullseye every time. Americans move around a lot, and sometimes they adopt words and even pronunciations that go with their new location. For instance, somebody might start saying spendy instead of pricey after moving to the Pacific Northwest. People can also pick up words and usages from parents or grandparents who grew up in a different part of the country. So they might say teeter-totter, even though most people where they live say seesaw. Still, enough patterns exist to make the dialect quiz more than a game of random chance. Many of us can be connected with our home regions fairly accurately by the way we say our words and which words we say. Furthermore, in spite of the fact that Americans watch the same television shows and movies across the country, follow the same blogs and comment boards, and relocate to different regions in large numbers, America's Englishes aren't getting any more alike. On the other hand, Americans as a group sound distinctively different from other English speakers, most obviously in their pronunciations. Caught, caught, and caramel would all sound different from any American dialect if said by someone from England. The English omit the R sound in places where most Americans pronounce it, so heart sounds closer to hot, and instead of the typical American pronunciation of bath, they say something more like bath. They use words differently, too. For instance, they use shall more often, as in, I'll sit here, shall I? This book tells the story of how Americans got from the British version of English, the only version until English speakers settled in North America, to a form of the language that is easily distinguished from other Englishes, and yet is itself full of variety. Part of the story has to do with natural linguistic processes. Like all languages, English is constantly evolving and adjusting to meet the needs of its users. Most of these changes occur very slowly, so speakers of the language don't consciously notice them, but over time, they can lead to significant variation. A version of a language that identifies its speakers as being from a specific location or group is called a dialect. Dialects arise when there's little or no contact between different groups of speakers, either because they are separated geographically or because they belong to communities that don't mingle. All languages are made up of dialects. People sometimes think of a dialect as a degraded version of the real language, but in fact, everyone speaks a dialect. One dialect may be singled out as the best or most acceptable form of a language because the people who speak it have economic power and social prestige. But in reality, all varieties of a language evolve in the same way and are equally effective forms of communication. Given enough time, distance, and isolation, dialects can grow so far apart that their speakers no longer understand each other at all. For instance, the Germanic language, spoken in Northern Europe a few thousand years ago, split into dialects that eventually became German, Norwegian, Swedish, Danish, Icelandic, Dutch, and English. Nothing so drastic has happened to the English language yet, but there has been plenty of time for multiple dialects to arise. As we'll see, the first colonists were already speaking different Englishes when they arrived in North America. Separated from the home country by thousands of miles of ocean, their speech continued to evolve in innovative ways and take on the characteristics that made it clearly American, while at the same time retaining some of their original differences. The most obvious part of language change happens in the vocabulary. Words enter and exit the language or simply change their meanings or how they're used. When speakers of different languages come into contact, they often borrow words from the other culture, especially if their situation calls for new terms that don't exist in their own language. Word borrowing was the first step in reshaping English for American uses. The earliest colonists adopted Algonquian terms to name the unfamiliar plants and animals of North America. The American lexicon has continued to evolve throughout the country's history and is still growing and changing today. Changes in pronunciation are another big part of how American English took its current shape. Sound changes are almost always small and incremental and happen below the level of consciousness. But they can eventually result in speech that sounds very different from that of a few generations back, or different from speakers in other places. In American dialects, variety mostly comes down to how people pronounce their vowels. Vowels are shaped by moving the tongue forward, backward, up or down in the mouth, and pursing or widening the lips. When we speak, we don't think about the shape of our mouth or the position of our tongue, but that is how we create different sounds. Language change, and hence language variety, happens when a subgroup of speakers starts shifting the place in the mouth where a vowel is typically articulated. For instance, bait has a long vowel that is pronounced with the tongue about midway in the mouth. If speakers of a certain dialect start pronouncing the vowel of bait slightly higher in the mouth, it starts to sound more like beat. This change happens across all, or at least most, words using that vowel. Having bait and beat and other word pairs using these vowels sound almost the same is not optimal for communication. So those speakers will probably start to pronounce beat differently as well, to differentiate the words. For example, they might keep the vowel high, but start to push it farther back in the mouth. Eventually, a whole set of vowels will shift so the words they appear in continue to sound distinct from each other. Vowel shifts have happened several times in English over the centuries. As we'll see, regional vowel shifts, which are still happening around the country, are a large contributing factor in keeping American dialects distinct. If you hear someone speak and know they are from the Northeast, or the Midwest, or the South, most of what you're hearing is differences in vowel sounds. Because vowels are important for the following language change, vowels in this book will be illustrated with an example word that represents the sound in most dialects, as well as described by the place in the mouth where the vowel is typically articulated. Because dialects do differ, this system can only be approximate, but it allows listeners to follow along without any technical linguistic knowledge. Unconscious linguistic processes are only one part of the story of how English Americanized. Languages don't exist in a vacuum. They are interwoven with society, affected by events in the world and by the behaviors and attitudes of the individuals who speak them. For that reason, this book covers a certain amount of American history as well as American speech. The two track closely together. As already mentioned, the English language started changing as soon as colonists arrived on North American shores and encountered the Algonquian speakers whose homeland it was. Later, speakers of other languages arrived and contributed their own words and ways of talking. It should be noted that the population of the United States includes native speakers of hundreds of languages besides English. Not all of them speak English as a first language, or at all. Their languages are also part of the rich tapestry of American speech. But because this book is about English, it will mostly touch on those languages as they relate to American English. As Americans spread out across the continent, people from different regions and social levels mingled in new configurations and affected each other's speech in novel ways. Every major facet of American life, politics, social movements, scientific inventions, wars, popular cultural trends, has played a role in forming the English language and differentiating it from British English. This book will show how those threads intertwined over time. Americans themselves also guarantee that the language continues to be full of variety, partly through linguistic creativity and partly through their own self-awareness as speakers. The early chapters show how Americans, eager to separate themselves culturally from England, struck out on their own linguistically. They unapologetically adopted new words and usages, like Thomas Jefferson's invention, belittle. At the same time, they preserved some words and sounds that the English had abandoned, such as the expression, I guess, and the pronunciation of R after vowels. The book's later chapters explore how Americans have continued to keep the language fresh by embracing innovative ways to express their identities through language. Slang and colorful colloquial speech have been part of the language since early times. The earliest slang arrived with the convicts, indentured servants, and others outside the mainstream who brought their vernaculars and jargon. But Americans soon began inventing their own. One major source of linguistic creativity is the generations of young people who have adopted their own in-group language. Another more recent source is found online, ranging from teenage texters who use abbreviations and typographical symbols to express their feelings, to political discussion groups that invent code words to keep their conversations secret. Shifts in societal attitudes have also affected the language and how we use it. The landscape of pronoun use is constantly shifting. The growing trend of using they to refer to a single individual is one example, as are suggestions for new pronouns like ze and here. Americans are also engaging in discussions about how they want to be identified and appropriate ways to refer to each other. For example, Americans have shifted from stewardess and mailman to flight attendant and mail carrier. They are investigating inclusive abbreviations such as LGBTQIA+ and new inventions like Latinx. Given the myriad influences that have shaped American English, it's hardly remarkable that there are 8 or maybe more ways to address a group of 2 or more people. American English started out as a collection of Englishes, and its speakers have continued to build on that foundation, both consciously and not, while at the same time contributing material to the language as a whole. Languages never stay static. As the afterword explains, American English is still evolving and taking off in new directions. Where we are going starts with where we came from. A group of immigrants finding its footing, and a new nation, finding its identity. 1. The beginnings of American English. English Americanized. In the preface to his landmark 1828 dictionary, An American Dictionary of the English Language, the lexicographer Noah Webster made a bold prediction about English in the United States. Our language, within 2 centuries, he wrote, will be spoken by 300 millions of people, italics in original, who are destined to occupy the vast territory within our jurisdiction. As the Anglo-American population of the time was about 12 million, mostly clustered around the eastern seaboard, many might have seen this claim as extravagant. But Webster was not far wrong. Over 330 million people now live in the United States. While many languages are spoken around the country, most people speak some English, and for a large majority, it's their first language. The English they speak is recognizably distinct from other Englishes of the world. American English features its own vocabulary, its own identifiable pronunciations, some common throughout the country, others specific to a region or group, alternative spellings, and ways of constructing sentences that are different from the British mother tongue. Besides that, Americans have novel ways of expressing themselves. They use figures of speech that grew out of the landscape, culture, and history of the United States, blaze a trail, pass the buck, step up to the plate, and a constantly evolving collection of slang terms that range from colonial expressions for drunkenness, in liquor, stiff as a ringbolt, to the latest buzzwords of Gen Z, extra for over the top, salty for irritated. When Webster's dictionary appeared in 1828, the United States had been an independent country for less than 40 years, but English had been Americanizing for centuries. Out of the 70,000 or so words in an American dictionary, 12,000 had never been recorded in a dictionary before. Many, if not most, were American inventions. These named physical features of the continent, swamp, canebrake, and native plants and animals, raccoon, persimmon, cranberry. They also included a large number of words that covered various aspects of American life. Congressional, electioneer, barbecue, land office, corn mill, deputize, caucus. Webster also introduced several spelling changes that Americans would eventually adopt. These were meant to make spelling simpler and more consistent. Changes included dropping the U from words ending in O-U-R, like color and honor, changing the I-S-E in words like organize to I-Z-E, dropping the K from the ends of words like music and physic, switching R-E to E-R in theater and center, and replacing Q-U with K in words like musket. Spelling thus became another way that American English distinguished itself from the British variety. The language had grown apart from British English in other ways, too, although these were less easily captured in a dictionary. By the early 19th century, Americans were beginning to develop a discernibly different accent from the British. For instance, in most parts of the country, Americans pronounced the R sound after vowels and at the end of a word, as earlier English speakers had done, while the English were beginning to drop it. They also pronounced the sound of A differently in many words. The English said bath with the same vowel sound as in hot, but Americans pronounced it as they do now, with the same vowel as in hat. Different regions had their own speech patterns as well. New Englanders said white without an H sound for W-H-I-T-E, and backcountry Virginians said cheers for chairs. Americans even composed sentences differently. They often used will with I and we, where the English used shall, I will do it, rather than I shall do it. Some speakers left out the to be in compound verbs like ordered, delivered, or said I want in, rather than I want to come in. On the other hand, Americans preserved some words and usages that had become obsolete in England, such as fall for autumn and I guess to signify agreement or certainty. While American speech was still obviously English, it encompassed a unique set of words, pronunciations, usages, and expressions that differentiated it from the language as spoken in England. The English of the First Colonists. The language that Americans speak today was built on a foundation of 17th century English, which is noticeably different both from present-day American speech and present-day British speech. Here is a sentence from a 1612 description of Virginia, written by Captain John Smith, leader of the Jamestown colony. Virginia doth afford many excellent vegetables and living creatures, yet grass there is little or none. This sentence is easily understandable, but no English speaker today would say it. Doth is no longer in use, and living creatures instead of animals sounds stilted. The second half of the sentence would probably be written now as, there is little or no grass. Besides these issues, the spelling seems quirky. Vegetables. Grasse. Creatures with a capital. As described in the book's introduction, English, like all languages, is constantly evolving. Words come and go, and pronunciations change over time. Sentences also get structured differently, so grass, there is little or none, shifts to there is little or no grass. Even before the first colonists carried English to North America in 1607, the language had already undergone several major evolutions. It would continue to evolve in both the British Isles and in North America, with myriad changes accumulating in both places over the centuries. English emerged sometime in the mid-5th century, when waves of Germanic tribes began invading southeastern Britain, gradually settling throughout the southern part of the island. It grew out of the version of Germanic that these tribes spoke. Old English, as the earliest form of English is called, resembled present-day German more than modern English. The language was well established by the beginning of the 8th century, when the first Old English poems and stories began appearing in writing. Old English started to morph into Middle English sometime in the 12th century, partly from the impact of the French-speaking Normans, who invaded England in 1066 on behalf of their leader, the Duke of Normandy, also called William the Conqueror. The Duke defeated the English King Harold in battle, seized the throne, and installed his followers as the new ruling class. The French language became the language of the court and officialdom. Gradually, a large number of French words infiltrated the English vocabulary. At the same time, English itself was changing in various ways that made it seem less like German and more like modern English. For instance, the word endings that identified subjects and objects in Old English were disappearing. Middle English is the language of Chaucer and the Canterbury Tales, more familiar than Old English, but still hard to read without a glossary and some practice. This stage of the language lasted until around 1500. English shifted from middle to modern during the 16th century. The Jamestown colonists spoke early modern English, the language of Shakespeare and Queen Elizabeth I. Although far more intelligible to present-day English speakers than previous stages of the language, early modern English is clearly different from the English of today. That's why Shakespeare's plays now come with glosses defining all the words that have changed meanings or are no longer in use. Besides the vocabulary, the biggest difference between early and later modern English lies in the vowel sounds. The 16th century brought a series of changes known as the Great Vowel Shift. Its main feature was that the long vowels of English began to be pronounced with the tongue held higher in the mouth. Long vowels are pronounced with a tense mouth and are of longer duration than short vowels, which are pronounced with the mouth more relaxed. An example of a long vowel is the sound in boot, ooh. A short vowel is the sound in book, uh. At the beginning of the 17th century, when the Jamestown settlers first arrived in America, English was still at the tail end of the Great Vowel Shift. Because sounds typically change in sets rather than one by one, as one long vowel began to be pronounced at a different place in the mouth, it pushed the vowel that had been previously in that spot into a new place, at the same time leaving a spot for a new vowel to move into. Each shift in pronunciation triggered another one, as though the first vowel to move was nudging the next one into a new position. This pattern of sound change is called a chain shift. Since spelling was beginning to be set, the result was that many words spelled the same or nearly the same as they were during the Middle English period are pronounced differently in modern English. For example, M-E-A-T-E would have been pronounced the way we now pronounce M-A-T-E, A, while mate would have been said using the vowel that we now use in H-O-T, ah, so it would have been pronounced something like mot. When people said boot, oo, it would have sounded like the way we say boat, o, and boat would have been pronounced with a rounded aw sound, almost like boat. Other vowel sounds were also in flux. Short E and short I alternated, so spirit and little were sometimes pronounced sperit and lettle, while get and devil might be said git and divil. Boil and royal were pronounced more like bile and rile. Also, many words spelled with an ER had the sound of AR, such as marcy for mercy and sarve for serve. Although this sound has mostly died out in the United States, it's still heard in England in words like clerk and derby, which are pronounced something like clark and darby. Other sounds were slightly different too. For instance, words that end in U-R-E were pronounced without the gliding Y sound, so creature, pasture, and nature were said creator, pastor, nater. A GH before T was pronounced like F, so daughter and brought were dafter and broft. This pronunciation still exists in a few words like laughter and enough. Finally, consonants were sometimes dropped, as in wep for wept, next for next, and respect for respect. Word final ing was often reduced to in as well, for instance, stockin for stocking, while a g was inserted in other words such as suddenly for suddenly. How is it possible to know how people sounded in the 17th century? We can get a fair idea of early colonial pronunciations because spelling was much less standardized than it is now, particularly among the less educated. Although spelling conventions were hardening, aided by the introduction of the printing press in 1476, 17th century spelling was still fluid. The result is that many people spelled words the way they sounded, even among the more literate, whose spelling didn't particularly reflect their pronunciation, there was still plenty of room for personal choice. For instance, many people added extra silent vowels or spelled the same word more than one way at different times. Records from the Salem, Massachusetts witchcraft trials of 1692, written by various members of the community, offer many examples of spelling by ear. Spellings that reveal the writer's pronunciation include, I have warned the parsons, above named, accordin, A-C-C-O-R-D-E-N, to tenor of their summons, S-U-M-M-O-N-S-E. Sarah Good did most grievously torture me, T-O-R-T-E-R, several times since, S-E-N-S-E, since. There was a Lettel, L-E-T-T-E-L-L, black minister, M-E-N-E-S-T-E-R, that lived at Casco Bay.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?